Week two of March Madness back here, not that fucking basketball tournament, the podcast. We'll say the name in a second after the opening credits. But Mackenzie, with that in mind, this being sports themed month, did you play any sports as a kid?
Yeah, I was not allowed to play most sports because of my accident when I was a kid. So when I did finally get to start being competitive in anything, it was swimming, competitive swimming, non-contact sport. So I swam for USA Swimming for a couple of teams, UT and another local club here in Austin. And yeah, did that for a long time.
That's cool. That's a fitting, mostly individual sport for you, but some, a little bit of team dynamic in there too. I was also trying to find an appropriate way to find humor in this, but was your accident that happened something that happened to you or something you did to somebody else that you weren't allowed to play youth sports?
I didn't do anything to anybody else, shockingly enough. No, it was my bicycle accident that I had when I was very young, and I basically I broke my whole ass face. Yeah, crushed it all up.
You don't have an ass face. Don't say that. Guys, you can't see her. She does not have an ass face.
I do have a titanium face, though. That part is for sure. Lots of titanium up in this bitch.
Like,
yeah, if you punch me in the face, it's going to hurt you more than me, for sure.
Anywhere else, though, you're dead. But the face, now you're in trouble.
100%. What was yours?
So I did a little bit of everything, but mostly baseball for like 4 or 5 years as a kid. All-star second baseman in sixth grade. No big deal. I was from a small town. But I also did basketball for one season, I want to say. I'm 5'4" now. I was shorter, believe it or not, as a child. So basketball is not my sport.
Not your jam. Not your jam.
Pun intended. Not my jam. And then I also, my dad was big into bowling. So he set myself and both of my siblings. It was a way for my parents to probably get us out of the house, all three of us, every Saturday morning. So we would go to the local bowling alley and bowl for like 2 hours in like competitive teams and stuff. So I got decent. I wouldn't say I was great, but I was decent at bowling too.
That's awesome. Your Saturday mornings sound way better than mine. I was definitely doing chores and would have much preferred bowling, but I do have a bowling ball, which, you know.
You own a bowling ball?
I own a bowling ball. I don't bowl a lot, but I have one. And
you know, how heavy is it? Like, how many? What's the poundage on that?
It's been a long time, so I'd have to double check, but I think it's an 11 pound is what stands out to me. I feel like I remember 11. Does that feel right?
Yeah, I think I used a 10 when I was younger, and I think now if I do go bowling, it's probably like a 12, so that sounds about right.
Nice. Also, 11's my lucky number, so that could also be why I could have just told the guy, like, I would like an 11-pound bowling ball.
It would be funny if you had no idea what the number meant. You just saw your favorite number on the ball and were like, yep, that's the one right there.
That's the one. Which feels like something I would do, to be honest, so who knows.
Well, I thought that this opening segment would have more childhood trauma than it did. We got a little bit, you know,
we got a little bit of trauma for sure.
My struggles with basketball, but I'm a little let down. Okay, let's keep it light though, because last week got heavy. So I think it's good that we're getting rid of trauma early in this episode.
Just light trauma, no big deal. So we did all right. All right. Welcome back to We Drink and We Watch Things. I'm Mackenzie.
I'm Lamar.
And today we're continuing
March
Madness.
Why did you go to take a drink from your drink right? I knew I was just going to say I'm Lamar and you were bringing the glass to your mouth.
And I immediately was like, I need booze. As soon as I heard you say anything, I was like, I need
a
drink.
It's instinct at this point. It's just like, I'm talking to Lamar. I need a drink.
I got to start drinking immediately. Okay, well, we haven't drank yet, despite all evidence to the contrary, but here we go. We are continuing our March Madness with a league of their own, our much-disputed baseball pick, which we'll get into later. But
disputed. It's just it was a very close call with the Sandlot. And don't worry, people who voted for the Sandlot, we have a plan for that long-term. You won't get it this month, but we will be doing Sandlot eventually.
I'm more speaking to like all the aggressive DMs I got about all these other baseball movies that weren't even on the poll. And I'm like, well, they're not on the poll for other unrelated reasons. Like everybody call Mate, everybody who wanted to mansplain to me that Bull Durham is a great baseball movie. And I was like, I'm aware. I've heard it. I've seen it. I love it. We're not opening that can of worms on the pod. But there were a bunch of great suggestions. So we do appreciate the suggestions. They were really good. But it didn't seem like our list was comprehensive enough, I guess is maybe the way to say it.
Yeah, I think there's such a thing as too much choice. So yeah. I think it would have come down to The Sandlot versus League of Their Own anyway. I think no matter how many picks, it would have been those as the final two. So
I think so. Yeah, but you're right. We'll address The Sandlot later because that one's just too good not to talk about at some point. Yeah. But in the meantime, we tried to jump the gun on it already with the drinking, but what are we drinking?
We are drinking what we have dubbed the Rockford Peach. And I think you came up with the actual recipe, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is basically, if you like gold rushes, it's basically a gold rush with some peach liqueur, essentially. Mm-hmm. So
it's tasty.
Quite. And then did you do puree? Because I know you were on the fence, puree versus
liqueur. Yeah, I ended up using like a peach puree. And then I think I offset it with a little bit of Cointreau. So it's got a bit of orange in mine as well. But it's very, very good.
You're an orangey peach. Yeah. Nice. Shaking it up. All right.
You're
cool.
A Rockford peach.
You're a Rockford peach.
I don't know why
peach.
That line stands out to me, but.
Well, cheers to that. Now I'm allowed to drink, so I'm going to drink.
Yeah, cheers.
All right. Well, I mean, just to warn you guys up front, we know that most of you, if not all of you, have seen this movie. There will not be a spoiler-free section. This movie's been out for a hot minute since 1992. Yeah. So. It's been around the block for a while. And if you haven't seen it yet, I feel super bummed for you. You should get right on that. But yeah, it came out early 90s. Great film. I have so many like young kid memories watching this movie. I feel like I've seen this movie a bazillion times. And it's so funny to remember how it felt when you watched it the first time versus like rewatching it now. And so it's kind of a classic in that way, I think. And it's pretty universally beloved. I mean, the ratings are what? Metacritic is 7.6 out of 10. Pretty solid. Pretty legit.
Yeah, Rotten Tomatoes high on both the critic and the audience scores. IMDb also like a 7.3, which is pretty high for a sports movie and a comedy in general. And what you said before about your childhood, this is one of the first movies that I remember connecting with my mom on. Like, this was one of me and my mom's favorite movies. And we don't really have a lot of those in common anymore as I've gotten older, because she really likes Tyler Perry. I'm not a big Tyler Perry guy, but she loves Tyler Perry. So we don't sit down and watch those, but we'll always have a League of Their Own.
There you go. Just go back to that League of Their Own. Yeah, I'm not a big Tyler Perry fan myself either. But it's funny you say that. My grandmother, my grandparents rather, on my mom's side, they were not big movie people. But this was one of the few movies that they loved, that they really liked, and one of the even fewer movies that lived in the house. So like I remember going to my grandparents' house where there were like no movies there. It was like My Fair Lady, Breakfast at Tiffany's, and A League of Their Own. And that was like literally it that was in the whole house. So we watched this a lot when I was a kid. And if you could get my grandparents to watch a movie, it was pretty impressive. Pretty impressive.
And that's a good one. It's a feel-good film for the most part. There's obviously some emotional moments, but it's just a very uplifting film. It's based on a true story, which is awesome. And yeah, it's funny, it's witty, it's emotional, it's clever, it's all these different things. So it's just an enjoyable watch.
100%. Well, let's run down some of the basics before we dig into the fun stuff. So if you didn't know, this was directed by Penny Marshall, sister of Gary Marshall. I only say that because I feel like people hear, you know, Gary Marshall and they can place a lot of things by him. But she's actually quite ubiquitous as a director as well. But they have a very similar tone, I find. They seem to always kind of like their films have a similar energy to them, similar.
What has Gary Marshall done? Because I can't tell you.
So he did, gosh, now of course it escapes me. The first one that popped into my head, I kind of don't even like, which is
Star
Valentine's
Wars.
Day.
Valentine's Day. Isn't Valentine's Day a horror movie?
I mean, we're talking about clearly different Valentine's Day movies. You would have a horror movie reference
readily
available.
I'm pretty sure there's one called Valentine's, or maybe I'm thinking of Prom Night, but I could have sworn there was a Horror would be called Valentine's Day.
I'm sure you're right. I'm not saying you're wrong at all, but definitely not the first one that came to mind for me.
I'm thinking of My Bloody Valentine. My Bloody Valentine. That's what I'm thinking of.
Okay, okay, okay.
That makes sense. Let's just do that one instead. Let's skip this baseball shit. Get back to October horror movies.
Let's get down to My Bloody Valentine, exactly. Well, point is, he did like Pretty Woman, Valentine's Day, Princess Diaries, I think, is him as well. Like, just that kind of like feel good, wholesome energy to them, generally speaking, is like kind of his vibe. And I think her work is the same. You know, her work is
the only one I know of hers is Big, but that, you know, another Tom Hanks one, but again, another very positive, uplifting, witty, clever one.
He also did Hocus Pocus, which, like, let's get down to business. That's legit. So, yeah.
We talked about that one on our Halloween episode.
She plays his wife in Hocus Pocus. I forgot. If you want to picture who Penny Marshall is, she plays his wife in Hocus Pocus.
Wait, he cast his sister to play his wife in a movie?
Yeah, but he's like, they're not romantic at all. They're basically fighting, is the point. Like, it's kind of hilarious. Do you remember, like, the guy who plays the devil in Hocus Pocus, where the girls...
It's been a minute for me, honestly. I do remember.
Well, the Sanderson sisters, like, go invade this house because they think he's the devil. They think that he's their master, quote-unquote. And she's this, like, housewife, and they're all flirting with her husband, and she, like, loses her shit on them. It's very funny. Anyway, that's her. She does go work. She's directed this film. He obviously is also in this film, and so we'll get into that in just a second. But yeah, so she's done some great work. It was written, however, by Kim Wilson, Kelly Candelay. I don't actually know if I pronounced that right. My apologies if that was wrong. And Lowell Gans. So... kind of a, I mean, the writing of this film is so good. I mean, I think it's just a well-written film.
I found it interesting when I was looking, because when I looked it up, I thought I saw four names, and I thought it was two females and two males. And what I thought was, you know, just based on name alone, I apologize, but they didn't have pictures. So anyway, I thought it was weird or strange that the two females are the ones who came up with the story, and I guess maybe outlined the loose story of this, or adapted the story in some way from the true story. And the two males are the ones who actually got credited with writing the screenplay. And I thought that was very strange, but maybe that's just more a sign of the times of the early 90s of, oh, it's a comedy script, like, let these two dudes write it. But to its credit, this doesn't feel like it was written by two guys. The script here is very, I think, coming from a man. This was speaking two women in a way, you know, that most films written by men, I think, couldn't.
At that time, yeah, for sure. Yeah. That's interesting. I would think, yeah, it's probably just, you know, like, this is the storyboard, this is the story idea, and you guys go fill in the gaps. Like, they definitely are multi-credited here with all of them.
Okay.
But yeah, I love that Barbie has, like, feminized you in such a way that you are just now looking at everything with this lens, and I'm so proud. I'm so proud
of you. I only get passionate about female issues and wrestling, as we learned last week. Those are my two things that's my platform.
An incredible combo, by the way. Really love it. Okay, well, this, we have an awesome cast and crew here. We'll knock out really quick as well. Of course, Tom Hanks as Jimmy Dugan, real dude, again, to your point, based partially on a true story. Most of the characters are based on real people, but he was a famous baseball player as well, Jimmy Dugan. Gina Davis plays Dottie. And we have, actually, note there, I didn't write down the older version of Dottie, but I remember, and even to this day, rewatching it, thinking that this was the same person and they had aged her so well.
Same.
Like, she looks exactly like her. I can't remember her name, but her older actress version.
So well cast.
And so well cast.
I think the other thing that adds to that, the effectiveness, is that they did have Gina Davis dub her dialogue
the
voice. So it sounds like Dottie throughout the whole film as well.
It does. It's such a great trick. But yeah, she just looks just like her. It's like Gina Davis, is when she gets older, is going to look like that woman. So anyway, beautifully done. But Lori Petty as well plays Kit.
Who had to color her hair because of this. She got cast. So this ties into Gina Davis. So Gina Davis was not the original pick for Dottie. She had to replace, I think it was Deborah Winger or something. I don't know if that's the exact name, but this other actress, 3 days ahead of shooting, could no longer do the film. So they brought in Gina Davis to replace her. They had already cast Lori Petty. They had to color her hair so she would look more like Gina Davis.
Look like
so they could be sisters.
Wow, I didn't know that one. I mean, I did know that she was recast, but I didn't know that she had to dye her hair and do all that to kind of match her. That makes sense, though. But yeah, they do make them look pretty similar, other than the fact, of course, that she's like way shorter than her.
Towering over her like a monster.
But other than that, they look very, they do look similar. I feel like it works. But yeah. So we have Lori Petty playing her kid sister, Kit. And then we also have Madonna, of course, because why not, playing All the Way May.
And apparently a huge pain in the ass on set, too.
Which, like, are we, is anybody surprised?
Doesn't
by
surprise
that?
Me in 0% the least. Apparently, she's still not welcome in the town that they did the majority of the filming for the World Series. Like, they're just like, Madonna, don't come back here because hard you were just no. so terrible to everyone in this town.
She's always been a diva. I mean, I think that, again, the, like, that that passes the vibe check. Like, I'm not at all surprised. But she also did, so Madonna played the lead in Evita, if you've never mm-hmm. seen it. And she plays Eva Perón. And she does a beautiful job in that film. And she sings, of course, that part really, really well. But similar stories on that set as well yeah. of her being yeah. just kind of a pain in the ass.
Yeah, no one's disputing her talent, but she just doesn't seem like a very pleasant person.
But like, why can it, this is just a different tangent. If you're talented and successful and you have all these great things going for you, like, could you maybe just like not be a dick? I don't know. Pro tip.
Yeah.
Just maybe don't be a dick.
How hard is it to, yeah.
How hard is it to just like not be a douche about it? But whatever. C'est la vie. Rosie O'Donnell coming in hot as Doris.
I don't like to, as even as a kid, I didn't like Rosie O'Donnell.
Really?
That was before she even got her own show.
I remember watching that show a lot, actually.
Yeah. You watched the Rosie O'Donnell show a lot?
Listen, I didn't have cable.
Name five episodes. Name any five episodes.
Oh, I can't name
episodes.
Them. I'm it's kidding. A talk show.
That's the joke. That's the joke. but yeah, so I was not a huge Rosie O'Donnell fan, but I did like her in this. I think she fits this role very well.
She did a great job with this role, and I think she's been good in a few things. And Gary Marshall, as we said, you know, sister Penny Marshall is the director, but he plays Mr. Harvey, and he is based off, if you didn't know, Wrigley. So Harvey Bars is supposed mm-hmm. to be Wrigley chewing gum, and if you, of course, didn't notice, Wrigley Field, one of the most beautiful ballparks in all of America and one of the most historic, is the setting for the audition or the tryouts for the league. And so, you know, he's supposed to be Mr. Harvey, aka Mr. Wrigley. So everything was set there in this beautiful, beautiful ballpark. And
did you know
he
they originally wanted for that part though
to be Mr.
Yeah,
Harvey.
Mr. Harvey.
No? Mm-mm.
I don't think you would guess it in a million years, but it's Mr. Christopher Walken. That was her first. Can you imagine him?
Yikes.
Give me your best Walken impression, Mackenzie.
I think that would be a misfire by
That's
a lot.
That's a terrible impression. I think
You're
that
right.
would be a misfire by a lot. Say that again, but in Walken voice.
Oh, man. I don't think I can do it. I have to hear it first. We need a clip of Christopher Walken. Hit me with a
that
clip.
That Super Bowl commercial where they had everybody doing his voice. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, my sister's the impressions person, man. She could do any of these. She did a great Forrest Gump, for example. I used to love my sister's Forrest Gump. She was
People
really
say
good
I do a good Christopher Walken.
Let's go.
All right. Hello, it's me, Christopher Walken. I'm walking here. Yeah.
Oh my god. No.
Pretty spot on.
It feels really different for me, but you know, you do you. Whatever you think works. That would be such a weird casting, though, truly. I don't see it. I don't see it.
Mm-hmm.
But he does good. He does well, Mr. Marshall, nevertheless, even though he wants to shut down the league after the first year, which we'll get into that. But which didn't, spoiler alert, end up happening in real life. This league ran for 11 years, in case you
yeah.
were curious.
And it was successful right off the bat, too, is interesting, because mm-hmm. this movie makes it seem like it was struggling. But what this league did was they actually chose cities in sort of not the middle of nowhere, but in the Midwest that did not
Midwest.
Have Major League Baseball teams mm-hmm. because the draw was these fans were willing to pay money. This is before cable television. So they are willing to pay money to go see live sports. So actually the league was
right.
a lot more successful, but this makes for a better movie. So
for sure. For sure. You got to have a little bit of a conflict there. Plus, it really kind of jives and makes sense that it wouldn't necessarily be that successful out of the gate. I mean, just, you know, misogyny is real and people think that women can't play baseball or certain sports or do certain things. So unfortunately, it makes a lot of sense that it wouldn't go well. But very, very quick high level summary of the plot. Two sisters joined the first female professional baseball league and struggled to help it succeed amid their own growing rivalry. And this is a fictionalized true story, as we said. So based on a true story, but it's definitely been fictionalized. And the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League did last for 11 years, to your point. And a lot of the key folks, like Lowenstein, who actually I didn't call out his name in the cast. Ira Lowenstein, yeah, the actor's name escapes me at the moment, but does an incredible job as well. And he was instrumental in making this league successful. So it lasted a long time. And I wish we still had women's baseball. I would totally watch women's baseball. Like,
I still don't get why women have to play softball. And I'm not calling into question. I think softball, you have to be very talented. I think they're great athletes. But I don't understand why they made it that women had to play softball as opposed to just letting women play baseball. Why?
I don't know. I don't know why it ultimately failed or why they transitioned to softball or what have you. Because, yeah, I think baseball is just as, if not more interesting than softball. I also think softball seems in a lot of ways harder just because of the ball itself. Mm-hmm. So, I know you. It's not going to go as far. It's not going to hit as far, things like that. Like, they did things to the game for softball to make it, like, I don't know, not as interesting as baseball in my view. Like, you can't get the same hit off a softball that you can off a baseball. You know what I mean? Like, that's part of what makes the game entertaining and seeing how far you can get out of the park and like stuff like that. I don't know, it affects how you pitch it, you know, things like that. So I'm just surprised that has been the transition. And yeah, I personally would love to see us just play some fucking baseball. Why not?
Let them play. Let them play.
Let them play. Okay, we're sorry. We're going to stop now. We're not sorry that we want there to be baseball, though, for sure. But yeah, so, I mean, this is a great movie and well-rated. Super enjoy it. But also was very successful at the time when it came out. It was a $40 million budget, and they blew that out of the water. They came in at $132 million.
Yeah, so, and that's not even just at the time. This remains the top grossing baseball film of all time. So let that sink in for a second. Baseball movie.
Yeah. I mean, which if you think about context, all the ones that you guys suggested to us that you love, Sandlot, which is, of course, a classic, Moneyball, which was incredible. Mm-hmm. It was a great film, incredibly well written, was very popular, nominated for a bunch of Oscars. Yeah. Like this outgrossed that is quite incredible.
Fuck you, Angels in the Outfield. Kiss my ass, God.
I was going to say, I think it's a little blasphemous to tell the Angels in the Outfield to fuck off.
I did. Shout out to my friend Matt, though, who did point out that the entire plot of that movie is that God is willing to meddle with professional sports. That's just a great way to summarize the premise of that film.
I mean, it is impressive that he would get involved, you know. I guess maybe he's just a baseball fan. He's like, that's the sport. That's my sport. You never know.
And they named the team after his like soldiers, so clearly that's who he would want to win.
Oh, fair. Yeah. It's true. He was like, this is my team. They made it for me. Mm-hmm. I gotta support it. But yeah, so, I mean, we got lots of goodies about this one. We're not going to, like, you know, go over it in a specific plot order. But the high level is that Dottie and her sister, again, have this core rivalry. And there is a baseball scout who is looking for women players so that they can come and to the Midwest. And these women are based in Oregon, but they're all over the place that they are scouting these folks. And they're actually already playing baseball as part of like a local league, like a dairy league and things like that. And they're already, you can tell, you know, Gina Davis's Dottie is really good. And her little sister is just this stubborn, like kind of bratty character. It's interesting to watch this again as an adult and be like, she's just kind of a brat, or at least for me, she was.
Yeah, definitely sort of. She's got middle child syndrome, despite not being a middle child, I think.
Yeah, she's got strong younger sister
vibes. What about me? Yeah.
Yeah, the what about me-ism of it all. But I'm a younger sister, but I definitely was bratty when I was a kid, but I didn't have like that energy the way that she does, where like she's this direct competitiveness with her sister. And my mm-hmm. sister and I were like not competitive in that way. We definitely had different interests and stuff, so like we just didn't have that vibe. But she doesn't want to hear anything that her sister says. Like, her sister is trying to help her, trying to be a good coach and what have you, mm-hmm. but she is, like, you could say she's a little bit of a know-it-all. She is really good at this thing, and so
self-righteous.
A little self-righteous. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Exactly. A little self-righteous. She does know what she's doing, and she will let you know that she knows what she's doing as well. But yeah, Kit's very stubborn about that, like does not mm-hmm. want to hear it, is not about that life. And but then the scout comes, wants Dottie specifically.
Wait, can we put some respect on the scout, please?
Yes.
Mr. John Lovitz, Mr. killing John Lovitz. This damn role.
He also looks just like the real guy. I don't know if you ever saw the real dude, the picture of the real guy.
No.
No, you didn't see mm-hmm. it? Mm-mm. He looks exactly like him. He's like, it's almost eerie. And I think they show a picture of him later, too, where you can kind of see it. But
I didn't know he was a real person. But Ernie Cappadino, I think I have written down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's based off a real scout. And it was the one, I think it's the one guy. I think it was the one scout. And so he really was like kind of putting together this whole league, at least in the early days. It was one scout, which I guess makes sense.
I thought it was interesting looking back on this, especially on rewatch. But even as a kid, I remember thinking, why isn't he in the movie for longer? Because he was far and away when I was young, my favorite part of the film. Like the things that he's saying, the insults, the barbs, and how much of a dick he is to all these people. I really enjoy. And then he disappears and you don't see, you get a little goodbye to him at the very end. But I always thought that was weird. And apparently, I don't know how much he was in the original script, but they did trim down his role in the film a little bit, or at least his dialogue, because they realized that test audiences really were just laughing at all the horrible insults he was spewing at these young women and like the hurtful things and how callous he was. So they cut out some of his other developmental moments and some of the more just spur of the moment conversations he was having in favor of just having you laugh your ass off at everything he says.
Just him being a dick. Okay. Yep. That's hilarious. I mean, it really lands, and it does become like that becomes his character very much. I love when he's walking off the field. So spoiler alert, he gets them both to come, you know, Gina Davis has to talk him into like, okay, I'll come, but you got to take my sister too. So she does like sort of, as she quotes later, gets her into the league, quote unquote. But then they're leaving at Wrigley Field and going their separate ways. And they're like, wait, where are you going? What's happening? Like, what are you doing? He's like, God, I hate when they get attached like that. And I always just love that line because it just implies that every girl, every woman that he dropped off at that field is like attached to him, gloms onto him in a short period of time.
Now, speaking of John Lovitz as Ernie, they also pick up along the way Miss Marla Hooch, who we didn't talk about. A hitter. But she's played by Megan Cavanaugh. And I did not realize as a kid, and people are going to roll their eyes because I think it's very obvious, but I did not realize as a kid that she was also in Robin Hood Men in Tights, which was another one of my favorite kid movies. And she's Broomhilda in that. Never put it together, I guess, because she's wearing a baseball cap in this and she wears like the hood thing.
Headpiece. Yeah.
Yeah. Headpiece in that one. So maybe I just couldn't tell the difference because she had on a different hat. But yeah, I did not realize that was the same actress.
I mean, I didn't know that right away. I did know that after a while, like seeing it, I don't know, probably when I rewatched it in like my mid 20s or something like that. I think I feel like was when I discovered that. But, you know, I always just feel so bad for her as an actor that she's like, especially in this one where they talk so blatantly about how ugly she is, and like they make such a point of it, and of course they're trying to make her look very plain, they're trying to make her not look, you know, super attractive, but she's not like horrendous, and they're making it seem like she is just this troll. And I just have never, I didn't like that then, I don't like it now, I don't think that ages well. But it, I mean, in this case it does, I mean, it contributes very specifically to the story, right? Of they have to like in protest basically say like, we're not going if you don't take her, like she's just too good to pass up, because she's fucking incredible. She can hit righty, she can hit lefty. If you like or you watch baseball, you know what a big deal that is, and she's literally knocking them out of the park. So it would be ridiculous to not have this person on this team. And like though that they don't highlight that during the tryouts, like she just makes the team. She just makes the team because she's a fucking awesome hitter.
And I love the emotional moment that you get with her dad explaining that he's raised in, again, different time. Double different time, because this came out in the 90s, but it's based in the 40s. So for him to say, you know, I raised her by myself. She's a tomboy. I always taught her how to play sports. Right. And that's why she doesn't wear makeup and all this stuff. And you get this very heartstring pulling speech from her dad. And I think that's a good little emotional moment early in the movie when most of what you're doing at that point is still laughing.
For sure. And he has a short but, yeah, really kind of beautiful appearance in that way of he's telling this story and explaining if she were a boy, he'd be talking to the Yankees, which, yep, like, he fucking would. You know, she's really, really good. So,
but he's an idiot because the Yankees aren't even playing right now. They're at war. So shut up, Dad. I take back everything I said.
There goes your emotional moment. Fuck off. No, yeah, he does a great job. But yeah, then you get everybody to the field, to the auditions. I keep saying auditions. I'm such a theater kid. Tryouts.
The auditions.
I'm such a fucking theater kid. Exactly. Yeah.
Baseball auditions will be this Saturday at 3:00.
100%. I wasn't, as we said, I did not play team sports when I was a kid. So I didn't go to a lot of tryouts. I definitely went to a lot of auditions though. But yeah, so they go to tryouts at Wrigley. Of course, again, beautiful ballpark. If you haven't been, you got to see a game at Wrigley. It's a requirement, I think, for any baseball fan. And it's cool because they meet the rest of that fun cast of characters that we mentioned. They meet, mm-hmm, Madonna, they meet Doris and all that. And I love, who doesn't love the moment when they're saying, well, you know, a lot of you are going home. And they're like, wait, why are you assuming that we're going home? I think is what, mm-hmm, they say. And so then she throws this really fast, unexpected pitch. And Gina Davis catches it.
Palms it.
Palms it. Bare hand catches it. So legit. Love it. It's awesome. It hurts to hear. You know, you're like, holy shit. And I just love the immediate adjustment. Okay. Some of them are going home. Like, it's just one of my favorite lines. It's so cute because they're just, they come in and they immediately make themselves known at these, you know, a big tryout. There's what? Probably a couple hundred girls there and only 100 are going to make the team.
Yeah. Yeah. And speaking of the tryouts component, the actresses that wanted to be in this film, whether they were extras or even the main cast, actually did sort of have to pass a baseball tryout as part of their audition, yeah, for this role. Like, you were not allowed to be in this film if you couldn't pass as a baseball player.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, for example, Marissa Tomei auditioned for this and sent in like a reel while she was filming a different movie. I think My Cousin Vinny, she was filming at the time, mm-hmm, sent a video to Penny Marshall, but Penny Marshall was just like, she's a great actress. She just doesn't have the baseball skills that we need for this film.
She can't play. Yeah. And you saw, because there are so many moments that they film where it's like, it's not a stunt double. It's not an extra, like they are playing. So, you know, I think it's easy to assume that these women are tapping out for certain scenes or what have you, but they're the ones playing and they film them truly playing. There's so much great footage, like you even see later in some of the freeze frames and some of the stuff you see for the museum later, the still shots of them playing. Mm-hmm. It's them playing. You can tell, like, and you have all seen those freeze frames in really truly watching any sport. You can see the consternation on their face or a gesture or what have you. You can tell when somebody is really playing. And I think that's what I love about this film and how it's shot. These women are playing and you can see it, and the effort and the physicality is totally there.
Apparently they just had them on the field and they would just play actual baseball games, yeah, just to get extra real footage,
just all kinds of shots,
to fill in some of the you know, montages and whatnot.
100%, 100%. And I think it really shows, and it shows in the, like, it's such a good way to produce the film, you know, such a good way to shoot it and plan it and get some of that really good content.
Yeah. But like, segueing out of the actual tryouts or auditions, if you will, when you get another scene there, which I referenced earlier when I said, you're a Rockford Peach, that scene of the woman who can't read at the tryout, mm-hmm, list, that always got me in the heartstrings too when I was a kid. And that one definitely lands.
That's very sweet. And it's kind of sad. Like, he doesn't get it at first. He's not trying to be mean. He doesn't know what's happening.
Yeah.
And she can't read and what have you. And I love that somebody just runs up and helps her and they figure it out. And then they're very welcoming. Nobody.
Women supporting women.
Women fucking supporting women. Exactly. Not a one of them is like, eh, she can't read or what? Ooh, she's so country or whatever it is that they could say about her. They were just like, cool, she's on our team. Like, fuck, mm-hmm, yeah. And so, yeah, I love that. It's a really, really sweet moment. And then you see them kind of bond into their respective teams right away. And again, that women supporting women vibe. And they're all, that's the other thing about this film, is they're all such different types of women. You have the quote unquote, we don't really, you know, I think we've said this on another pod, we don't really say tomboy anymore or whatever, but like, you have the mm-hmm, prototypical quote unquote tomboys, but you also have these like girly girls who are into makeup, into clothes, into nail polish and lipstick and all the things, but they just want to fucking play baseball. And I just, and that's true. Like, I just think women really do run the gamut in that way. You can be somebody who is dressy or well put together or whatever, and you can love a sport like baseball, or you can love something that's typically associated with men or what have you. And I thought this movie did such a good job, especially at that time, to your point, both in the 90s and in the 40s, of showing that diversity of types of women who would all be able to bond over their love of this game.
I mean, for God's sakes, you got Madonna, her character May, who is a dancer at a club, and Doris is the bouncer. So it does really bring all types out to the field. It's the baseball's the game that unites our country, where wings take dream, or whatever George Bush said.
America's pastime. America's pastime. That's what it is, for sure. But yeah, they start playing these games. They're shot really well. They, of course, are playing in skirts, which is fucking ridiculous. But I mean, they still, again, they show the fuck up. They're covered in bruises. They're scraped. They're getting, you know, scrapes and all this stuff. But what happens early on is that Jimmy Dugan is there. He's an alcoholic, as we've come to find out over the early stages of this film. And he's been hired for his name. He's been hired because he's a famous player. He's going to lend some gravitas to the game, going to lend some gravitas to this league that needs that promotional aspect to it. And so he's not really involved early on. I mean, he's definitely already made his mark as far as stealing scenes and things, but he's just
the
sitting
peeing
there.
Scene? Are you talking about the peeing scene?
The peeing scene. Yes. Literally made his mark. Literally made his mark.
That I read that was actually Tom Hanks just had to, first off, he gained 30 pounds to play this role, which when you think of Tom Hanks, he seems kind of timeless in a way.
Yeah,
like, obviously he's aging, but I didn't realize how early in his career this was like year 10 to 12 in acting for him. And he had his breakthrough roles, but for him, when he's that young, to be like, yeah, I'll take this role that's going to have me play this alcoholic and I'll gain 30 pounds and look kind of schlubby. And he looks older than his actual age in this film. But for that peeing scene, apparently it was just Penny Marshall directing it from inside one of the bathroom stalls with a hose and a bucket. And she didn't even tell Tom Hanks how long he had to sell it. Like, he was just supposed to listen and pretend to pee along
and, like,
with it.
React.
And he just reacts so, like, it stops kind of, and then he just keeps going again. And he's just a great actor. So, good improviser, too, I guess.
He did great. And it's so funny. And it's such a weird and funny introduction to his team. And I love that they all have varying degrees of reactions to this. Some girls are, you know, very much scandalized. Others think it's hilarious. One of them is trying to time it, you know, whatever. And it's such a, it's such a funny introduction to him and to the team. And it shows you that right away, he's not really taking this seriously. And he continues to not take it seriously. He continues to literally fall asleep in the dugout, not pay attention. So of course, Dottie, the best player on the team, is kind of having to take the role of manager as well. She's catching and managing the game, and she's calling for the team. And he finally starts to pay attention when there's a play he doesn't agree with. Mm-hmm. Marla Hooch is up at bat. She's telling her a certain position, and he is not happy with that. And then they get the legendary, I feel like, signal war that's so fun, where they just go back and forth with their different signals and they just keep doing it. And she finally bows out, you know, and lets him do it.
I like that the reason that she storms off is that he basically says, I'm the coach. And she's like, well, then fuck effing. And she doesn't say effing act like it, but she says something to the team.
Yeah, she
like,
said,
well,
then act like it. Then act like it. Exactly. Yeah. And so he finally starts to take an interest and, like, really begin managing the team. And of course, that first call that he makes can't be overlooked, that she gets a hit. I mean, it is Marla Hooch who hits everything.
You probably don't want to lay down a bunt with your best hitter. So I'm with Jimmy on this one. Like, swing away.
Yeah, no, he's definitely, she gets an incredible hit, and it does well for the team and for the game and all of that. So yeah, it's such a great moment where you see it sort of shift, where he starts to invest, he starts to care about the team, he starts to watch the games, he's realizing they're not as bad as he thought. You know, he just assumed that women's baseball was a joke, and he starts to take it seriously and really watch and get invested. And him and Dottie bond as a result. They get tight because she's the best player on the team, and she's also, again, been managing the team for him while he's drunk off his ass. And so now they sort of are like co-leaders. They're really both doing this together, and it's like the beginning of that relationship that's really cool.
And apparently the studio, when you're talking about their bond, the studio wanted there to be more of a romantic interest there. And I think you get the tiniest bit of it. You know, they'll share a drink here or there and they have these heart to hearts. But mm-hmm. I think there was originally a kiss written into the script that the studio really wanted there to be something of Dottie's husband is off at war, but she's bonding with this guy. And I think the movie works better without it, honestly.
I think it does work better without it. I don't think there's an easy or good way to do it and keep it clean, like keep it classy. I mean, like just have the story be clean and not suffer from it. Because even if she did, you know, say her husband passes away, let's just, gosh, worst case scenario, that telegram that comes later is for her.
Yeah.
It still would be like she would have guilt around this relationship with Jimmy. She would have like devastation and grieving for other reasons while simultaneously trying to begin a relationship with this man. Right. It just, there's not a clean or classy way to tell that story. And I think it would have corrupted the film for sure. But I totally see it as well. Like they do have a bond. They do have chemistry. And there are certain actors who just have chemistry. And Gina Davis and Tom Hanks have chemistry. And I think that comes through in the roles to some degree of like you kind of are, you know, kind of rooting for it. But yeah, I do think it would damage the story. I don't think it's the move for sure.
Yeah, I think it makes the story more compelling to have it be just a purely just two partners who are working for the
two
success of this
friends,
team. And
yeah.
Obviously they are friends as well. And he's giving her advice on a personal level and he wants her to keep playing and not to sort of go back with her husband after he gets back. But yeah, I think it definitely works better than if there were something romantic there.
But I also think that and I totally agree with you, but I also think you could make the argument that Tom Hanks does have or Jimmy Dugan's character has some affection for her and some attraction to her, and it helps pull him out of his own shit. You know, like he clearly is struggling at the beginning of this film, and seeing and bonding with her and being able to just relate to a woman in this way, I think you can say it contributes to his motivation to get his shit together, is that he does care for this woman in what is potentially a romantic way. But I think it's also just as classy of him to go, I may have feelings for this woman, but she's a married woman and I'm not going to do anything about it. And this is just going to stay a friendship and a respectful professional relationship. So yeah, I think it's well handled ultimately.
I agree. Yeah. I think that this movie ties a lot of individual storylines together, and that's one of them. I think that if it was just a baseball movie about the women's baseball league, but to have this story of these two sisters who are kind of rivals and one of them is going to get traded to the other team and now they're meeting in the World Series, that's one thing. You have this storyline of a girl learning to read while she's on the road with these people. You have the story of this, I don't want to use the word homely, but this girl who we're told is homely throughout the film, finding love while they're out there. And then you have the story of the manager who's an alcoholic and this league kind of turns his life around. So I think that's why this movie, again, is so uplifting and positive.
Yeah, and you have a bunch of other stories too. You've got, to your point, Madonna, when it feels like the league is going to fold, she's devastated by that because these clubs that she's coming out of from dancing are, you know, they're not a classy place to work at the time. And you're getting felt up by dudes in an uncomfortable position, but you got it, like girls got to work, you know, and she doesn't want to go back to that. She's doing something that she loves and she gets really upset about it. But they also give it some humor to it where she's like, what if my bosoms fall out in the middle of a game?
When they're trying to get more people to come to the games. Like, well, let's just flash
them. Doris's only reaction Madonna is the literal best. She's like, you think there are men in this country who ain't seen your bosoms? Like, it's just so funny. But there's like stories like that, that it's, again, it's a wildly different type of person. And then you've got a mom with her son trying to bring her son on these.
Stool angel.
Oh my God. He's an actual monster. But you got to give that working mom fucking credit, right? Like she's trying to hustle and take care of her kid and she's doing the best that she can. And that's a whole other story that was representative. And like, again, you're not seeing a lot of movies telling all of these types of stories, especially in one larger story. And then I also think that you can't overlook that Black women could not play at this time. There's still so much segregation everywhere, but also carried over into professional sports. And they even have a way to work that in. right? Like mm-hmm. they're in a game and they have a fly ball and this woman sees it and catches it. And it's this black woman and she throws it not just to the closest person, she throws it across the fucking field. Mm-hmm. And clearly somebody who, if given the opportunity, could have also played in this league and done really well. And they have just a small moment there of even acknowledging that. And I think this movie does such a good job of that.
Yeah. And credit to Penny Marshall on that front too, because I think it would have been easy to say, oh, well, we will just cast African-American women to play on the teams. But she felt it was important to not mm-hmm. completely exalt this league, because the truth is that this league did remain completely separated.
Yeah.
Even after Jackie Robinson had broken yep. the color barrier in Major League Baseball, mm-hmm. this league stayed segregated throughout its entire run. So mm-hmm. never did black women play in this league.
Right.
But I think this movie found a way to, I guess, pay homage, mm-hmm. but still to show some respect for, like, hey, our country, there was a lot wrong with it back then.
100%. You can do both is the thing, right? You can say this league was an incredible feat and it achieved a lot of things for women at that time, while also being critical of the fact that it didn't evolve in this way. I think right. you can do both. And I think mm-hmm. she does a great job of doing both. She does an awesome job. So yeah, good call out there. We also just have, again, speaking to more stories, you see women who get married. So Marla, of all folks, is somebody that I love her wedding in this movie. It's so yeah, cute. They have yeah. The baseball bat arch. And she's just the last person you would expect to get married with all the quote unquote homely comments that they make about her. But, you know, she meets her man in the club.
I was going to say, well, you couldn't do a very good walk. And can you do a good Marla Hooch singing at the club?
No, I can't.
Mackenzie,
mostly because
we gotta work on your impression game.
I'm not an impression girl, but I will practice. Give me a heads up next time, and I'll practice one, and then I'll be ready.
Here's what you have to practice. It had to be you. That's how it goes.
I think that was a great impression.
Thank
that's
you,
very
thank
accurate.
You.
Very accurate. But she serenades the shit out of what is his name again?
Nelson. I'm singing a Nelson.
I'm singing a Nelson.
I have so much of this movie memorized.
I know. But I love how she says it. You're totally right. I'm singing a Nelson. Like, she's just all in. And yeah, she ends up marrying the guy. She's a beautiful little baseball bat wedding arch. Adorable. Love it. One of the more sad storylines, though, is for our very own Betty Spaghetti, who mm-hmm. is so sweet and great player. But this is one of the, like you said, it's an overall very lighthearted, nice, beautiful film. But there are a couple rough moments. And this is one of the ones where there is a telegram from the War Department. The guy who brings it is the most insensitive piece of yep. shit you have ever seen. And his fucking color commentary the whole time he's trying to figure out who this telegram is for. I mean, I could have slapped him then. If I was Jimmy, mm-hmm. I would have been like, figure it out outside, you piece of shit.
Yeah.
Anyway. He's terrible. And then Jimmy wrestles him basically for the telegram. But what you see in that shot is it's the slow, very intense, purposeful walk. And it could very easily be for Dottie. She's right next to her.
It could be for any one
of
them.
And
it's such a great shot because you watch each of their faces as Jimmy passes by or approaches them at least.
Mm-hmm.
And each of them, the credit to the actresses here of just the worry and the concern and all the terror going through their eyes until it finally gets down to just Betty and Dottie.
Mm-hmm. And it looks like he's beelining for Dottie, and like, you can't help but think that that's potentially what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And to your point, Gina Davis, like her reaction when it's not her, the relief, the sadness for Betty, you know, mm-hmm. the immediate and everyone wanting to comfort her, women supporting women, like coming to her and trying to take care of her in that moment. It is just really a beautiful scene overall, but it is hard. It's a hard watch, and it's one of the few like moments of just rough emotional suspense in the film.
Yeah, the actress there nails it too, Betty Spaghetti's actress, who actually, another little bit of nepotism in this film, is Penny Marshall's daughter. So Betty Spaghetti is played mm-hmm, by Penny Marshall's mm-hmm, daughter, but mm-hmm. she kills it in that scene for sure.
Oh yeah, she does a great job. You feel it. It's one of those, like, it gets you every time. Like, I always choke up a little in that scene. It's really good. But yeah, keeping it going forward, we have, you know, a bunch of other games and they're making progress and the league is starting to ramp up and get a lot of attendance and things like that. But that night, actually, the night of the telegram, I think it is shown as being the same night. Dottie is crying, upset. It's just the stress of it could have been her husband. She doesn't know where he is. And he fucking magically shows up. Bill Pullman coming in hot as Gina Davis's
Former president Bill Pullman.
Former president Bill Pullman, exactly.
The aliens. He's the reason that July 4th exists. So right. Put some respect on his name.
He protected us all, obviously. He does a great job. He's a small role in this, but he does a great job and he's very sweet. And it's nice to see that he shows up and like brings her this relief. He's injured, but he's not like severely injured. He's going to heal, but that's why he's back. But it's disappointing to me, and I'd love to hear what your thoughts are, but it's disappointing to me, and I think it is to a lot of fans as they're watching, is that she immediately decides to go home.
I was going to ask you that. That was going to be my very next question, was every time I rewatch it, I'm shocked that, we don't get a scene of him asking her or any conversation of him strong-arming her in any way. No. I think she just assumes that's the expectation. That's the way it's always been. And I think I can't remember if her dialogue has anything of, we want to have kids, so we want to start family. I want to get a start on that. Makes a little more sense. But it's a bummer that she isn't even wanting to finish out the season.
Yeah, I think it's just they're in the playoffs, right? Like, this is a big deal for her to finish this out, and she decides to go home. And she has said, we want to have kids, we want to have a family. This is what I care about. And that's totally fine. Like, it makes complete sense for any woman, but especially then, to prioritize having a family. I totally completely understand it. But you can't wait till the end of the season. It's not that far away.
Right.
And I think a lot of people are really disappointed in that decision, including Jimmy. And it just goes to one of the great interactions of this film among many, but he is really upset with her as well. She's not even saying goodbye, which I also think is looks a little shitty as well. And he calls her out like, you love this. You love this game. Like, you don't want to admit it. I don't know why. And there's all kinds of reasons you could claim of why she doesn't want to, throw herself into this. But he's like, no, you love it. I can see it. I can tell. And she just says, well, it just got too hard. Mm-hmm. And it's his amazing line about, it's supposed to be hard. If it wasn't hard, everyone would do it. The hard is what makes it great. And it's such a good line, and he delivers it. Oh, Tom Hanks delivers it so well.
Yeah, and I think he sees himself in Dottie, and he realizes that he, for different reasons, lost his dream, and he gave up his physical ability, to pursue his addictions instead, and lost his opportunity. And he doesn't want her to make a different type of mistake, but a similar line of like, don't give this up. You have this right in for you. We're in your prime.
Yeah. And they even say that to him earlier. They're like, listen, you're a young man still. You could still be playing if you hadn't gotten drunk and hurt yourself and ruined your career. Like, I can totally see him really being upset with her for not taking this as seriously as he feels like she should. And so they move on. She does leave, but she comes back. And
only for game 7, right? Or am I misremembering this? Like, she misses the entire World Series until game 7.
Yeah.
What if they had lost in 5?
Right. I guess she's been checking the paper and decided to keep turning around. Well, because she said we got as far as Yellowstone and then we turned back. And so you can tell this is like a multi-day trip that they've been driving home to Oregon. They get to Yellowstone, they decide to turn around, but it's going to take a while to get back. So that's the other thing is, takes a few days to get back after that. And so, she makes it back and for game 7. And of course, there's a little bit of a push-pull of I didn't say you could play. And of course, he wants her to play and she plays. And it's an incredible game. It's, again, you've seen this movie a bunch of times and you know exactly what happens. And it's just such a testament to how well it's shot and done that you still have that stress and anxiety of the whole game. Yeah. You're just like waiting for it to happen or go differently or what have you. And of course it doesn't. And her sister's team wins. And it's just not what you expect at all. And I'm curious what you think about that story choice. Would you have rathered her team win or the Racine Bells win?
I think having the Racine Bells win, at first it's historically accurate. And you could say, well, then just put Dottie on the other team. But I think it also makes a lot of sense story-wise because otherwise I think Kit gets no closure. She's still in her sister's shadow. Mm-hmm. And we didn't talk about how Kit got traded to the other team because Lowenstein or whoever it was thought there was conflict there. And he was like, I need to get rid of her to keep Dottie happy in here. So Kit takes it personally. Yeah.
Dottie was going to leave. And then she says, well, no, just trade me. And then, of course, he doesn't trade her. He trades Kit and it's a whole thing. But it ends up as you can see, being great for Kit. It's exactly what she needed.
Yeah, so I think that you get that final moment where Dottie recognizes the talent that her sister has. Her sister gets some recognition and gets out of her shadow, but Dottie's still very happy. It still, I think, even today, leaves a bit of a sour taste in my mouth when they're in the locker rooms and they're congratulating each other and whatnot. But I'm like, I really wanted the Peaches to win because they felt like the protagonists of this story, but...
They did, and they feel like the better team, to be honest. Like, not, I mean, even if you watch the game, I mean, you can see in the World Series, like, back and forth, there's a good, obviously, that's why I went to Game 7. But it feels in that game like they're playing so well, and then Dottie's back. And so you think, like, of course it was neck and neck in the first six games. Dottie wasn't there. Now Dottie's back, and you feel like it's going to be a blowout, but it's not. And that's unexpected. And but yeah, I do think for the story, you're totally right. It gives Kit some closure that she needs. But, you know, flash forward to where we're finally seeing them as all older women coming together for this big event and in this museum, and they're celebrating this beautiful league and everything that it meant to them. And then Kit and Dottie see each other, and I feel like there's such an implication that they don't really see each other, that their lives are very, very separate. Yeah,
I got that vibe too.
And I don't love that. I'm like, I thought this whole thing was supposed to be like a reconciliation for you guys, and you then can bond and be together as sisters. And obviously Dottie leaves the league anyway, and Kit can go on and to glory and fame and all the things. And like, that's just not what you get from it. You get like, we love each other and we respect each other, but we don't really have a relationship, really, is what the way it seems.
I mean, I don't know that it's they don't have a relationship. Maybe it's maybe they only see each other so often. But yeah, and I, speaking of the Peaches being better, Racine also had shitty coaching. I never realized it until I saw it on this time. But on the hit where Dottie puts the Peaches in the lead, actually, the Peaches have runners on second and third. And then Dottie comes up, who's their team's best hitter. Didn't intentionally walk her to first base. I'm sorry that I'm throwing a lot of sports at you, but it doesn't make any fucking sense. Like, why would you not walk her and load the bases? You have two out. And instead, she hits like a double or whatever and drives in two and gives them the lead. So Racine deserved to lose that game is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, Racine did not have good managing. And also, I mean, I will say, you know... You have Jimmy Dugan, who didn't manage it for so long well either. So it's like you wouldn't expect them to end up in the World Series, but they did finally kind of turn it around. So
maybe there's like a sequel that needed to be made with the Racine coach's story. Maybe he was like a coke addict and he's just like, throw the ball fast. We're never walking anybody. And he just has lots of ideas.
Yeah, we need that as the follow-up. We need the follow-up story. This is the sequel for sure. 100%. But yeah, I love the historical accuracy of it, that they, you know, they honored who actually first won, and I totally respect that decision. The Rockford Peaches are the winningest team in the league, though. They have the most titles in the league. It just wasn't the first year. And
they weren't even the runner-ups the first year. The first year it was the Kenosha Comets, but I guess they didn't think that was as catchy for this film, and who knows what our cocktail would have been today. But.
Oh my God. I have no idea. Thank you for changing it to the Peaches, guys. I don't know what we would have done with a comet, but okay. But yeah, no, they do a beautiful job. And I love that they pay homage to it in this museum, and they show you kind of like the flash forward of all these folks, and Stuhl makes a reappearance and all these people come back. You do feel like, you know, some people are not there, but most people are there, and they cast it so well that the older women, not just Gina Davis's character, but like they all look kind of like their younger selves. They do a really good job, and it kind of has the same energy as that original team.
Yeah. And I like how they handle the fact that Jimmy Dugan has passed away by this point. It's touching, but it's not a direct, we don't need a line of dialogue. It's just Dottie looking at sort of a in memoriam of him and his career and sort of reflecting on that and the times they had together. But I thought that was very touching as well.
I agree. And I love that he goes out on that note, right? He goes out on this positive note that he gets to kind of take with him after this career that didn't quite turn out the way that he wanted, but he finds real love of this game and of these teams. And, you know, he gets offered a different job by Mr. Harvey at the end there, and he turns it down because he says, I have a job, you know, this is the job that I want. And he has a real love for this team. He's gone from screaming at somebody for crying in baseball, which is of course another legendary line.
Number 54 ranked movie quote of all time by, let me look, the American Film Institute, number 54 of all time. So
how many times in your life have you said there's no crying in baseball? Like 1 million times. I have said it so many times. So of course it is. It's so great. There's no crying in baseball. There's no crying in baseball. He does such a good job. So, but yeah, so he's come from that, from screaming at his players to really loving this team and loving this experience. And yeah, I love that they close it out on that. It's really sweet. But yeah, all that to say, this is an incredible movie that I love very much. I have a lot of nostalgia about this movie. I think it does a lot of things really well, even for being early 90s, as well as, again, referencing a time where women were not treated the same way or with any kind of, you know, real equality. So I think it does a beautiful job in a lot of ways. I also love that it closes out the cast credits or the cast roster. So you see everyone's positions, positions that they played, and then their role and all of that. And so I just really love this movie. I think it's a really wholesome, like I said, about the Marshalls, very wholesome, but poignant film. And it's just a fun watch. Like, I could watch it a million times for sure.
Yeah, the humor all still hits too. There's still not hits. A single joke in the script, I don't think, that does not land still 30-some years later.
Yeah. Yeah, it all really lands really well. So I love it. I mean, all that to say, I could watch this again. I could watch this over and over. I feel like I could do this. It's like an 8.5 for me, probably, on this film. 8.5 or 9, maybe, even, because it's just such a good movie, I think.
Yeah, I personally, for all the reasons we said, just the humor is incredible. The script is tight. It's a fun movie to watch. It's got some emotional moments, so it'll also make you feel things. But by the end, you just walk out. You can't be in a bad mood after watching this.
No.
It's so great. And yeah, I think aside from the whole Dottie being willing to walk away from this sport just because her man showed up, that's the only, I guess, thing that gets me a little annoyed, but that's just the way the script works. So I'd say like a 9. I think it's a really, really good movie.
Really good movie. I'm glad we picked it. I loved your suggestions again, but I'm glad we went with this one. I think it was really worth the chat about it because it's just really good. It's a classic. But all to say, you know, you've seen it. Hopefully, go back and watch it again because it's just so damn good. You can watch it many, many times. But for now, you know, we're going to be back next week, actually, with our football.
I thought you were about to say the catchphrase. You said and like you were setting it up.
No, let me mark it, actually.
I thought that was funny. I'm leaving that in.
Okay, leaving it in. Got it. Well, you know, we're going to do our next football movie, which is what? Tell the people what we're going to talk about.
This might be a little controversial, especially the people who texted us and Instagram messaged us about not liking the baseball pick. But let me explain it. I wanted to do The Waterboy, and we had other choices. We had more dramatic choices. Remember the Titans, Rudy, all that good stuff.
Yes.
But I was like, we should do The Waterboy because it's like, again, just lighthearted. We've spent a whole month doing
heavy
Oscar
stuff.
Pictures and heavy films. Mackenzie does not like Adam Sandler at all.
I don't. I hate him so much.
So
I really don't.
We're going to do a different. Go ahead.
Do we want to just listen to me rage for an hour and like talk shit? Also, I overwatched The Waterboy as a kid because my sister loved that movie and I hated Adam Sandler and I've seen it a million times. And I'm already getting ragey. Listen to my voice. I'm already ragey about it.
So, all that to say, we are going to do a different comedy football film next week called The Replacements with Mr. Keanu Reeves. And I think this is the first Keanu Reeves movie we will be doing.
But I think so.
Definitely a little different for him. He doesn't, I mean, he's done comedy and he's done action and stuff, I think. But in the last couple decades, he's mostly been doing the John Wick things. But yeah, so we'll be doing The Replacements next week and come back because I plan on asking Mackenzie to elaborate for at least 3 to 4 minutes on why she hates Adam Sandler so much.
Oh, I have so much material. You're going to regret that decision. But I do think this is an underrated, not often watched sports film. So I am excited that we're going this route because I do think it'll be fun. But for now, go have a drink and watch a thing. Cheers.
Cheers.